And now for something completely different.
Smoke medical weed every day.
The following thoughts on Hoffy Hour represent Ryan Hoffy and Fastit. Listener discretion is advised.
Live from Tampa Bay, you are tuned in to Hoppy Hour.
He's the voice of a generation that got screwed by the baby boomers. Welcome back to Hoppy Hour.
Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour starts in 4, 3, 2, Hoppy, Hoppy, Hoppy. This is Hoppy Hour with Hoppy.
Oh my God. On the phone line is Drew Lane from the legendary Drew and Mike Show. He is on Hoppy Hour. What's up, bro?
How you doing, Ryan? Glad we pulled this together.
I have never been more grateful for a moment in my life than for this interview. I was having problems with my board. The old Roadcaster, I had the original one that came out in 2020, and I did like 200 interviews on that thing and never had one technical issue. I get the upgraded one because it kept dying, and it's just been crazy, man. It's crazy. I bet for you as a radio guy, you got to just miss the 90s and 80s, dude, when it was just talking into a microphone. Like, these podcasts are cool and all, but it's like, man, I just wish we could go back to the days of just talking into the radio when things like this happen.
I know. It's really tough not having an engineer, and I can really lose patience when we have problems, which we do have from time to time. We got it down pretty well now.
How would you say your show is doing? I love listening to it because to me, it represents a format that I grew up listening to, which is like guy talk radio, FM talk radio. And you guys are definitely one of the last to keep doing a show like that. So how would you say your show is in 2024?
I think it's doing really well, actually. We started out and, you know, with podcasting in 2016, people would go, "Oh, you're podcasting. What time is it on? How do I call in?" And nobody knew what the hell was going on. But in 2024, it's so much different. So many people have their favorite podcasts, their favorite five or six they listen to regularly. And so I would say we're doing very well. We show up on the iTunes comedy charts. We'll rank in the top 100 once in a while. So I think we're doing pretty well, actually.
What are some of your favorite parts about this current version of your Drew and Mike show?
Well, I like the freedom to say whatever you want, to swear, which I can't believe on radio that you still can't use certain words. It just seems so dumb to me now, especially because so many people do listen to podcasts. And some of the, you know, the FCC concerns, which really aren't there. I mean, we used to have to worry about them, and we got nicked a few times. But I like the show. It just feels really loose to me. When we first started, it was very work-filled. We'd make a lot of phone calls and get wrong numbers, and we had some screw-ups technically. But I really celebrated it at the beginning, and now we've tightened it up, and I think it's still a loosey-goosey show, but I still love the content. I still love talking about celebrities and pop culture and sports. And a tiny bit of politics. I wish politics wasn't so divisive. We'd probably spend a little more time on it. And I generally love just fucking off with the guys and talking about what people are talking about.
Going back to that, I was just listening to some of your old tapes. I listened to your current show, and then there's a website that has all the old shows of the old Drew and Mike show. And then there's like a account on YouTube that posts like the best of Drew and Mike. And I was listening to that just now. And man, the way you guys would make jokes about Bill Clinton back in the day, it was so funny, bro.
Yeah, we were pretty brutal. I mean, honestly, though, we really beat up on whoever the president was. It wasn't really a right or left thing like late night TV is now, where everyone is making fun of Trump, and hardly ever Biden. We pretty much pounded on anybody. And I never felt partisan, you know, that I had to help this guy or that guy. It was just whoever was the president seemed like the guy you made fun of.
I don't like that the liberal talk show host. Now, listen, I don't believe in anything political. It's just not my thing. But there's so much good content with everything Biden says with his dementia, and none of them talk about it. And I played it on my podcast on Monday. It's so funny, dude. Like, some of the things he says, it's like, what are you saying?
I know, you're absolutely right. And it's such a missed opportunity for them, but they're so hung up on being about partisans and being anti-Trump. And granted, Trump says a lot of funny things, and we play a lot of Trump drops in the show, and we play them just for humor. No other reason, not to beat up on Trump or to promote Trump. But yeah, it's really a missed opportunity. When Biden ran off that stage at Air Force and fell down, we put that up on YouTube immediately with some commentary over it, because he was fine, and it was just so fucking funny to see the President of the United States trying to act cool and run off stage and completely fall on his ass and then point to a sandbag like it was the sandbag's fault.
YouTube, you guys actually kind of influenced me to begin, like, I was recording my show, but you influenced me to, like, make best of clips on YouTube. And TikTok is obviously popular, and other social media platforms are popular, but YouTube is just like the classic. You know what I mean? Like, you can just have that deep dive on YouTube at 10 p.m. before you go to bed.
Yeah, no, YouTube is great. We don't make a ton of money. We make about $1,500 or $1,400 a month, I think, on our YouTube clips, but it's picking up. We're getting subscribers. I think we get about 14,800 or something. But I saw some of your clips on Instagram, and yeah, you're doing what we're doing, and your clips are good, and hopefully you'll get some traction out of that.
I'm actually doing really good. I did one about the ex-wife of Hugh Hefner. She wrote a book about how awful it was being there and how terrible it was, of course, after he died. And my interview skills and my on-air hosting is a little different, so people right now would not expect what I said, but we did not hold back. I despise those cloud chasers. Like, I know Hugh Hefner signed up for it by beginning Playboy and whatnot, but man, those girls, they were so cool to him when he was alive, and once he drops dead, they all want to cancel him. It's like, come on now.
No, I saw the clip. No, you guys nailed it. That was a good clip, by the way. And fuck those whores. They were lining up to fuck him, have three ways with him while porn was cranked at a million decibels in his bedroom. And then the minute he dies, all of a sudden he's so abusive and such a horrible guy. No, it's complete bullshit.
Did you ever go there to the Playboy Mansion?
No, I never have.
I heard it was absolutely crazy. And then I also heard that it was very chill. Like, I think there may have been different eras. I feel like maybe the 80s and 90s was crazier, and maybe like the last 20 years, it sort of tamed down.
Yeah, I think Quaaludes were really floating around quite a bit in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And then maybe, I don't know, maybe they were even struck by some political correctness and they pulled back on the Quaaludes. But yeah, it sounded really, really nuts. And then maybe it even became a bit much for Hugh, or he was just trying to keep up the appearances. But look, you know, the girl Kimberly Conrad, I think that's the one you were talking about on Instagram. What a fucking whore. She's 20 and she's fucking an 85-year-old. No, she married an 80-year-old guy, and now she wants to criticize him. When at the time, all she told us about was, he's so wonderful. He's so sexy. I love him so much. It has nothing to do with his money.
Yeah. I mean, it's infuriating because, like, it's just easy journalism for, like, Inside Edition to just do a 4-minute thing on it. And it's like, but you guys were celebrating the marriage in 2012. It's just, the whole thing is annoying. And honestly, it's kind of fun to talk about in a way, because, like, everybody can kind of get down with bashing famous people, but like when you start bashing Biden or Trump, you sort of lose about 50% of your audience. So that's why I try to have fun topics. People will be like, why don't you talk about Biden more? Why don't you talk about Trump more? And I'm like, well, because that's just going to separate the audience. And I have this mindset, bro, to get as many listeners as possible. And I don't want to lose it by, you know, bashing Biden all day.
No, I think you're on the right track, Ryan, because honestly, people do get so butthurt and they immediately think of Oh, what about this? Why didn't you cover this? Or, you know, Trump misspoke too. Why didn't you play that? And so, unfortunately, it seems that it's really hard to get people to be mellow or chill about it or appreciate a joke about whoever that they don't like. I think the great majority of the audience probably is with you most of the time, but you hear so much from that small group on the left or the right that it almost makes it not worth it to me.
I definitely agree with that. Going with your podcast that you currently do, the Drew and Mike Show, how much prep do you bring to the show? Like, for me personally, throughout the day, I'll go on the different news sites and I have a Google Doc and I'll copy and paste the clips from YouTube and the clips from, like, let's say TMZ and whatnot. And I save it for the next day's show. For you guys, when you have all your different topics, how do you guys organize it?
You know, that's a great question, and we're really good at that. I think prep is, if I had to say, is there one thing that I've really done well over the course of all these years, I would say it's prep, and I still believe in it. And so I spend probably 4 hours before the show going over stuff and sending things to Brandon and Mark, and those guys prep really well, too. Usually when I send them something, they already know it, and they have to send it to me. I already know it. So we're really, I think, one collective show brain that operates very well together. It's the video things that I think we need to be organized about, where we'll say, you know, these are the 4 or 5 best videos today. This one would probably work great on YouTube. Maybe this one would be great. It'd be good to hear, even if you can't see it. So you do have to think about those things. But I think we generally have worked together for so long that, we don't need to talk that much before the show and sort of spoil the spontaneity, but we do know what we're going to do.
I am huge on that. I record at my friend's setup. He's a professional EDM DJ, and he's a local DJ here in Tampa, and he's got a great setup. And when I walk into his place where he records, he's got this great setup. He like wants to talk. David will be like, "Hey, what's up, bro?" And I try to keep the talking to a minimum because I want to save it all for the air. I chug my coffee, smoke a little weed, and then I go on air. And to me, that's one of the most important things. I've worked with shows, Drew, where like they do all their talking during the commercial break, especially if it's like a talk show with a long commercial break. And then you go on air and there's nothing to talk about. It's like, why wouldn't you want to save all that spontaneous conversation for the airwaves?
Yeah, I think people really appreciate authenticity now. And so I think they want to hear your original reaction to each other. And I think it's really important. We always did that. And we knew that a long time ago, Mike and I did, that it would work better if we didn't discuss it. So a lot of times you start talking about something, we start laughing really hard and go, "No, let's save it. This is going to be great."
So looking back on Mike, what was your favorite part about him that he brought to the Drew and Mike Show each morning? Obviously, he was funny. He was likable. But what was one thing about Mike that maybe the audience didn't know?
His intensity about certain topics, like being an airline pilot, was so much fun to make fun of because he could take a joke and he couldn't help being so in love with flying. He could never he'd never say, "Oh, no, I don't want to talk about that because they'll fucking rag on me or play a bunch of drops." He would just have to plow ahead. And I love that about him. And also the fact that Mike was never afraid of the reaction. The reaction would come sometimes. You go, "Oh shit!" And it would upset him, but he just never thought that much about it ahead of time. He would just blow in. Like right now, I know he'd be talking about how much he hates Biden and he thinks Trump is great, and he would be all about Trump. But once he started hearing a lot of response, he might back off a bit. But normally, he just didn't. He either didn't care or he didn't think to care about the response. He just reacted first.
Two things I want to ask you. Did you guys ever get an FCC fine? And what was the most trouble you guys ever got into?
You know what? We never did get fined. We got really close, though, a couple times. After the whole Janet Jackson thing, which to me is the dumbest thing ever. Why is morning radio in trouble? Because Janet Jackson showed her tit at the Super Bowl. It was insane. But we were, we were talking about, this is kind of early social media. Evan Longoria had sent a dick pic to somebody.
Oh yeah.
And he had, did you see that?
I didn't see it, but I remember that was like TMZ.com days, right? Kind of.
Yeah. And anyway, it was just so weird to be looking at Evan Longoria's dick, which, if I remember correctly, was quite long and quite veiny. And I just, Mike was giving quite a descriptive response and trying to express what Evan Longoria's dick looked like. And it was very problematic because somebody recorded it and sent it to the FCC. So that was a tough one.
Now, if a bit back in your old days when it was the Drew and Mike show, did you ever feel like you needed to take back the offensiveness in a way? Like, because some of your segments are really edgy, and I think it's funny. I have no problem with it. But did you ever notice, like, a segment was getting really raunchy, and maybe you would try to, like, turn it down a bit? Or were you one of those guys where you wanted it to go as crazy as possible?
No, I definitely sensed sometimes you should just take the victory and walk away before you got yourself in trouble, because we always had those people that were after us. And I noticed that when we did get FCC complaints, they would typically be recorded on Saturday morning when the best of from the week ran. And these people knew, oh, anything really offensive they do will be re-aired on Saturday morning, so I can just record the Saturday show and get anything. So I'd become aware of that. And you know, you have to let it fly sometimes, but yeah, we were absolutely aware of certain areas that were going to be problematic, you know, if we were called to the carpet, and that was definitely a no-no. We did not want to get an FCC violation. They were very cognizant of that, and they made it very clear that they were very tired of the FCC and paying lawyers lots of money to defend us.
It's crazy, man. It's insane to think that the FCC would care so much about what some bored person did. Because, like, I've kind of done my research online about it, and didn't it seem like there were, like, religious groups that would, like, record you guys, Opie and Anthony, Stern, Mancow? Isn't that kind of what happened, where it was like you had a few people recording it, and they were actually giving you guys ratings by listening at the same time?
I know, isn't that funny? The Reverend Donald Wildman was a real big recorder of all these shows. And at one point, we found out that he had certain clips that we had done on the show that would be up on a website, and he would actually tell people, and it wasn't just us, it was other shows too, say, you know, click on this, on any of these bits that you find offensive, and we'll send the most offensive ones to the FCC.
Oh my God.
And make official complaints. So they're basically begging people to, you know, click on these things and listen to them. Things that they would be offended by, supposedly, and they're yet begging people to listen to them.
Now, how often did you guys, if at any time, did you guys ever have porn stars on the show? Was that ever your thing?
Oh, yeah, we did. We had a few. Not like Opie and Anthony, and we never were sticking wiffle ball bats in people. But we had our share of porn stars. In fact, one who threw a shit fit because they had sent us the wrong movie. And so we were promoting the wrong movie. And it was like, oh, come on, bitch. Like, this movie is so different than the one that we're supposed to be promoting. And then Ron Jeremy became friendly with the show. And he was in town a couple times. We had him in the studio. We had him on Valentine's Day once. And we used to call him from time to time, and he was a pretty good friend of the show before we ever knew what kind of a major, you know, lunatic he was.
It's weird. Radio exposed, and I don't want to say ruined two things for me, but it's definitely a beginning moment and then like a before and after moment. And what I'm saying is, before I got into radio, I thought porn girls were the best, and I loved comedy. And then working in radio the past 12 years and meeting a ton of girls in porn and then meeting a ton of comics, it kind of ruined it a little bit for me, where it was like a lot of them are weird and they're kind of like assholes. To me, it was like just growing up listening to Opie and Anthony, and every day they had a different comic on. And then you meet a lot of them and you're like, oh my God, are you a damaged person, my friend? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And we saw some, I don't know, I hate to call it a meltdown, but Greg Giraldo had kind of a meltdown when he was in town. But we loved Greg Giraldo so much. We really wanted to do whatever we could to help him and downplay what had happened. But he was so fantastic. We were not really that comedian driven. We didn't have comedians in all the time like Opie and Anthony. We had our favorites who we would bring in from time to time, and I found that worked. My problem with comedians is I couldn't bear it when it went flat, you know, when people weren't funny. Because guys who come in and they go, you know, what do you want to talk about? And they go, oh, just talk about anything. I'm hilarious just riffing. And then when you find out in the first 5 minutes they're not that hilarious, it's like, I just want to get this guy out of here because he doesn't want to do his material and he's not that great with our show. So when you find people like Greg Giraldo or Dave Attell that could just fit in and be hilarious, Dave Landau's like that too on our podcast, then I just love having him at any time. But I really was kind of fickle about who I wanted to have in and how often.
How often back in the Drew and Mike days, how often did you guys have like professional athletes on?
We had our share because Detroit's a great sports town. And, you know, we had Robert Porcher with the Lions when they were great in the 90s. And Chris Spielman was another one we had on from time to time. And then we had Chauncey Billups on when the Pistons won in 2004. But generally, the best ones are really hard to get. Darren McCarty of the Red Wings was the best guy we had because he liked the show and we were friends. And I would call him to talk about movies or whatever, but he was like, he was part of the show. He was absolutely fantastic, and people were mad about McCarty. Fought all the time. He was a scrappy player, and those are the best guys, the ones that actually listen to the show.
Now, I was listening to one of your episodes a few years ago, and I can't find the episode. It was on the website that has full episodes. And one of it was a girl that was flashing her boobs at a Pistons game, I believe. Do you remember that?
You know, it's funny. There's so many shows that had stuff like that that I don't specifically remember it. But if you refresh my memory, I probably will.
I remember it was something where it was like, this was like in 2004, so probably the year you guys won the ring. And it was a woman who was flashing her boobs at the Pistons game on the Jumbotron, and you guys were asking your audience, who was there? Can you break down the boobs or whatever? You guys were trying to figure out who it was.
Yeah, I think she surprised the camera operator and did that. Yeah, so that was one of those things where you heard about it and was like, oh my God, I want to find out how hot was this.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we were probably taking calls on it. But, yeah, that sounds like a perfect topic for us. I mean, right down the middle with the audience for sure. Now, hey, by the way, I wanted to ask you, because I know you worked on The Bone for a while. Does Calta, does he have comedians in all the time and porn stars? Are those two big things for his show?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
like all, every week.
Comics every week. Ever since the Me Too movement, he hasn't done the porn star thing as much. When I was there in 2015, 2016, and 2017, I was there for 7 years. But the first 3 years, they had porn girls in all the time. And now it's kind of a little more, I don't want to say family friendly, but they definitely cleaned up after 2017-ish.
Yeah, and they probably had to. They probably had no choice.
I mean, Drew.
So let me ask you, took like 10 comedians on the Calta show, how many out of 10 would you say would be doubles or home runs?
He would get the comics from Side Splitters, the local comedy club. So most of them were pretty funny. I mean, he has a good ear for knowing like which comic is good. He'll say on air, I don't want to have this comic on or whatever. But the moments that are great for him is when he has like Jim Norton on and Rich Voss. A lot of the guys from the Opie and Anthony universe, because he's a fan of Opie and Anthony, so he sort of knows – how to work with them. And also he's had guys like Shane Gillis on maybe like 3-4 years ago, right when Shane was sort of canceled and wasn't cool. And those are the moments that are good.
Wow, that was great. I mean, to have Shane Gillis on, he's fantastically funny. And that's important. I mean, if he's got an ear for comedy like that. And I felt that I did, but maybe I was just a little too picky about, and I just couldn't stand it when it went flat. So that's why I asked. But, I mean, Mike Kelce has done very well, so I'm not surprised to hear that. And I heard you talking about when you left Kelce's show that he was very unhappy about it.
I mean, it was one of the weirdest moments of my life. I don't know if you want to hear about it. I can break it down for you. I've told everybody about it. It's pretty much...
Yeah, I just, the reason I asked is because looking at radio right now, if I had a guy in my show who was your age, because you're, how old are you, Ryan?
I just turned 30 6 months ago.
Yeah, so you were like 28 at the time or so. And somebody thought they could better themselves by leaving radio, which is a very much a sinking ship, and the opportunities are really not that great. I would be so happy for someone if they could improve their situation by leaving. It sounded like you were working a lot of hours and not making a ton of money. So I was kind of surprised that he would be pissed.
It's honestly, it's sort of a breakup in a way. It was sort of a divorce. Pretty much what happened, I'll keep it short. But May 2022, he was like, I'm going to 98 Rock. I'm going to iHeart. I'm leaving the Bone. And we're talking on the phone. And he's like, I don't know if I can bring you aboard. He's like, if I need a board up over at iHeart Media, you know, I'll have you get hired. If you need to go somewhere else to make money, that's cool. So here's Tommy Chuck's info, who is the head of iHeartMedia. So I was emailing Tommy Chuck all summer because I'll never forget it. June 3rd, 2022, John Brennan, the program director, who was Kelce's old producer and pretty much got the job because of that. I'll just say it now. He busts in while... So Kelce did this thing called the after show where he would play the best of segments from 6 to 10, but he was allowing me to sort of hijack it with Happy Hour. And it was getting talked about. People were like, what is this show? Because people weren't used to it. I mean, MJ came up to me when I worked at Beasley, and MJ said, I remember when you would hijack his after show. And I did about 30 episodes. They're all on YouTube. It's all on my Ryan Hoppy Radio YouTube page, everything I've ever done. And pretty much John Brennan busts in while I'm talking on air and pretty much says, get in my office after the show. And he goes, oh yeah, you have a speech impediment. You're never going to make it in radio. I want you to just play clips. He essentially said that in a very corporate way. So I said, fuck this. So then I did about three more times. I snuck on air on the weekend, but never again on Kelce's after show. And I'm like, fuck this. I've been here 7 years. I've done everything for you guys. Did boxing matches for free, all this shit. So then iHeartMedia is like, do you want to go work with this guy named Ian Beckles, who I knew from the Bone, who played football for the Bucks and did a show? And I left. And I go to call Kelce like July 31st, August 1st. I just remember dates well. And it's two rings to the voicemail. And then he blocks me on all social media, even though he told me that I could go somewhere else to make more money if the Bone couldn't provide it or wherever he was going to go. And then he does like the, it literally became how Bubba treated Cowhead for 10 years. It's literally what it's become here. Like he still talks about me. And it's like, bro, like you blocked me. And then I saw recently he unblocked me on social. So I'm like, you're obviously creeping on my profile, bro. Like, I'm not a dummy. It's just, the whole thing's annoying, bro. Here's what's most annoying about it, is I'll be at, like, a bar. I say this to any girl I go on a date with. I describe it as, if I'm in a room with 10 people that listen to the radio that are 25 to 54, one of them at least knows who I am. So if I go to a dive bar in downtown St. Pete, or if I go to a rock and roll concert, some redneck's gonna know who I am and go, Hoppy, why'd you leave the Bone? Did you hear what Kelce said about you? And it's very off-putting, Drew. Like, it's awesome. It's amazing getting recognized out and about. It's very flattering, especially when I'm on a date. It's a great look. But at the same time, sometimes it's a very dark energy because you know how radio listeners are. Anybody can turn on the radio and be a listener, you know, especially when it's free radio and it's here in Florida. So you got all the bad shit, crazy people. So you got to imagine me. I'm 6'9". I have a limp. It's very easy to recognize me. So I don't ever want to leave Tampa Bay. But there were times in the last year that I was like, fuck this. But I'm glad I didn't.
Well, the fact that when he left and he said, you know, oh, I hope you get a job. If I left and was taking the team with me, I would have that all set up, or you would want to have it all set up. You have to take care of your people. So but at that point, it seems to me he's kind of saying you're on your own anyway.
Well, yeah.
He's not guaranteeing you a job.
Not just,
and then to act like you're a fucking slave or something. And did he talk trash about you on you after you?
He talked trash about me. I believe he had my ex-girlfriend on air. All this shit, bro. It was nauseating.
What?
It was literally, or he did a Facebook post where he got my ex-girlfriend to talk about her side of our breakup because I met her through the radio show. So she claimed to like own me and I never responded to it. I wish her nothing but the best. Like I'm not doing Jerry Springer radio. Like I truly wish my ex nothing but the best, and it's nauseating. That was the most fucked up thing to probably happen in this decade was when the two people I had the most trust for, my ex-girlfriend and Mike Calta, when they collaborated. That was quite possibly the most infuriating thing to happen this decade. And now whenever I'm on a date, and this is not me bragging. You know when like a dude brags and they go, oh yeah, I go on dates and I get girls, and you're like, shut the fuck up. But I'll say this. Whenever I'm on a date with a beautiful girl, I make sure that they're not a listener of the radio. Because my last two girlfriends were listeners, and that shit, man, they'll love you when it's popular to love you, but they go with what the host says. It's quite funny what happens when you're no longer a part of a show. You really see who your friends are. And I've said that a lot recently. There's a lot of crickets when it comes to people I used to hear from. Hey, yo, can I get into that Calta event? I'll buy you drinks and allegedly give you some weed, or I'll hook up with you. I'm a beautiful girl. But when you leave the show, all of a sudden it's like you don't hear anything. You know, it's quite funny. This is like me venting to you. The first 30 minutes was me talking about your life, and now I feel like you're like my shrink.
No, I'm fascinated. I can tell you're a huge radio fan, and I'm a huge radio fan first before I was ever on radio, and I'm still fascinated by radio. I love listening to new shows all the time, and I saw the list of all the shows you liked, and I was like, oh, what are these? Some of these shows I don't even know. I got to check them out. And I checked out your Instagram. And when you say people are no longer your friends, are you talking about the people that worked underneath Calta?
Yeah, because I used to hang out with them at bars. And they like all blocked me, and just not just people on his show, but like a lot of listeners that would invite me to a party and invite me here. And then it would be a picture and be like, oh my God, Hoppy from the Mike Calta show is here. And then I leave and then it's like, there's no more invites, which doesn't bother me because I'm very much more busy now that I have a day job in radio. I keep it very private because it's kind of conservative and I'm not. Like, I believe in some of the conservative beliefs, but by no means do I, like, vote or care about it. So I have to keep it very private. So, and I'm making the most money I've ever made. And that was the other thing. It was, like, this was 2 years ago. So this was pre-inflation. But I literally could not afford to work there. Like, Drew, it's crazy. Like, it's radio in the 2020s. You know how unimportant you are if you're on the radio in the 2020s? Wow, good. Congratulations.
No, I do. And people are always talking about how radio is dead. And it's just, it's not the place to be right now. It's not cool. And people your age just don't even listen to the radio. And they don't think about radio as being very important. So to have an opportunity to make a little more money, how could anybody deny you that?
I know, it's crazy.
Did they offer you more money?
No, it was going to be the same. The night show and some of the board ops during the day all make $15 per hour part-time. And then they literally, the best part, bro, this is such a session of you as my shrink, Drew. I've never had more of a session. on my podcast.
No health insurance?
No health insurance. Here's the best part, though. They go, we're giving you a $5 raise from 10 to 15, 11 to 15 or whatever. But then they cut the hours so that you're making the same as if you were making 11 an hour.
Isn't that fucking insane? So what is the new job?
I am a full-time board op of a bunch of shows during the week. And then I also do a lot of production there. And I get healthcare and benefits. I keep it low key because I want to keep, and I'm very outspoken about saying I want to keep my brand separate because I just like what I'm doing. But my boss is awesome. The people I work with are awesome. It's a 20-minute drive. All my other jobs were like a 5-minute drive, but I kind of like going across the bridge every day when there's not traffic and seeing the sun. So my life is good, you know. I'm on the dating apps. I mean, kind of talking to this one girl right now, but like the thing with me, Drew, is I fall in love fast and then I just end up getting my heart ripped out. So I'm definitely much more cautious, my friend. Like I'm not like going all in now. Like I'm being like, I don't know. I just can't deal with another heartbreak. It's just not the vibe check.
No, that's not important right now. You need to get your career together. And when your career comes together, all that other stuff will come a lot easier.
Oh, for sure.
Because I'm sure a lot of women are judging on that. And if I were your age, I would be doing so much more with Hoppy Radio and building a podcast platform. I would see that as my future.
Yes, I agree.
And I'm surprised a lot of young radio people are not doing more of that instead of trying to make something happen in radio because it's so hard. I mean, it used to be you knew at least if you could get a morning show, you could make some really nice money or maybe even afternoon drive. But now it seems like even that money is shrinking. So I would think anybody at your point in your career would be working on that platform and building those Instagram followings and the whatever, TikTok, and getting your podcast going.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, too, because, like, I don't even know if there's, like, an opening in radio anymore. Like, they literally shut down allaccess.com. To me, that was the most frightening moment of all time is when allaccess.com, where I found my radio jobs, when that website shuts down, I mean, oh, my goodness, bro. That was frightening. And then they just dropped The Morning Mess, which was the morning show on B96 in Chicago. So right now, B96 doesn't have a morning show for like the first time in 40 years. And then I heard some rumors from somebody I know who works at Odyssey that Odyssey is about to just do a bloodbath of layoffs very soon, that it's going to be ugly for Odyssey. And that most of the top 40 morning shows for Odyssey are all going to be voice tracked.
Wow.
Insane.
I don't know how that is the future of radio. I mean, that to me seems like you're just giving up.
Yeah.
Or trying to make it to be more able to sell off or something. I mean, you got to have, they should be putting on young people like YouTube stars, people like that in their early 20s. Those guys should be doing morning shows and afternoon shows, and midday shows. That's what radio could do. I think it would be try something crazy, but instead, radio thinks they can just live off the same 350 songs till the end of time. It's ridiculous.
It's weird because it's like, I feel like what was magical about your era was that I feel like, and you can tell me if this is incorrect or not, but I feel like programmers took a chance on you guys. They took a chance on Opie and Anthony. They took a chance on Mojo. All these big names. They took a chance on the youngins, and that's how I've always pictured it in my brain. And you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. I know you guys worked hard to get to where you're at, but I feel like back in the day, radio was like, oh, we'll give you a shot. Because I'll tell you right now, there's nobody that's going, oh, millennial wants a radio job. Here you go. Like, there's not even that many millennial radio shows. Elvis Duran is in like 100 cities and he's like 60 years old. He's great. But there's literally 100 jobs that are taken because he's in 100 markets. Bobby Bones, Woody, all those shows, you know?
I know. And some of those guys that are in all these markets, they're not even that good, but they're just cheaper and they're under contract to be at, like Dave and Chuck in Detroit. I think they get paid for WRIF and they don't get much more for being on in Tampa or Fort Myers in Boston. By the way, how do they do in Florida? Do you know?
Not bad. This is Calta's town, but they definitely, I think people are getting sick of Calta because they're definitely, I don't know how to describe their popularity. Like, I'll meet people out and about when I talk about radio. Most people talk about Calta or Bubba, but I'll say one in 14 people, if somebody talks to me about radio, one of them goes, oh yeah, I like Dave and Chuck in the morning. Not a lot,
yes.
It's definitely grown. And one of the things that I think really changed it is Calta's reputation with like the Hulk Hogan sex tape and then shoving Bubba's girlfriend to the ground in that video. I think a lot of people are really turned off by it. And I think that's why they might be going to Dave and Chuck. Because I'll flip through my radio, Drew, when I have a very short drive to work. And it's Orlando and the Freak Show, MJ, Calta, syndicated Dave and Chuck, and then a bunch of music DJs. There are no shows in Tampa anymore. And then you have Bubba doing AM brokered radio. But it's really weird for as big of this area is, especially what is growing with everyone moving here, you would think radio companies would want more options for all the new people, but nope.
No, I would think there'd be a couple of really young shows, up and coming guys. Like, you're right, we did get a shot. People gave us a chance. When we were 27, when we were 28, 29, 30, we were getting opportunities. People were interested in us, and we were floating tickets around. But when I started in Roanoke, Virginia, first I was in Christiansburg, which is even smaller, in Collinsville, Virginia. But I got to Roanoke, which is actually a market, and I sent out probably 200 tapes to radio and records opening. And you get a lot of callbacks where people go, you know, if you've just been in a bigger market, you know, I could put you in this market, but you don't have any large market experience. And so somebody had to give you a chance. And finally, a guy named Don Schaefer hired me to do a show in Charlotte, North Carolina. And Charlotte was a good market and is a good market. And so that was really my break.
What was some of the, now, let me ask you this. Did you get in trouble? Because I know a lot of radio shows have to kind of watch what they say in North Carolina. Because even for me, like, my mom's side of the family is from North Carolina. And whenever I would describe to them the things that I was doing at the Bone, they would look at me weird, like, whoa, you know?
Yeah, in Charlotte, I did get in trouble because Jim and Tammy Baker were going down, and that was a PTL, this famous televangelist.
I remember them.
Still around, by the way, and still hawking bullshit survival kits and stuff to make money. But they had embezzled a bunch of money from PTL, and they were going down, and there were a lot of people who just believed in Jim and Tammy to the very end, and I was absolutely destroying them on the air. And generally, the audience loved it. And we were doing great. I mean, the show just took off in Charlotte, which was one of the coolest things that's ever happened to me. But there were a few people who were really upset and loved Jim and Tammy. And so that did become a problem. And it became a problem with an advertiser who was going to pull their advertising, which is just unfucking believable to look back on. But fortunately, the station kind of stood by us and we got through it. But generally, yeah, North Carolina is fairly conservative.
Yeah. Now, going back to that, you just said that the company had your back during that. Do you feel like the loyalty with radio companies and edgier shows doesn't really exist anymore? Do you feel like that's not a thing?
I think it exists as long as you make a lot of money for them. Like Dave and Chuck, I think Beasley would support Dave and Chuck if they got in trouble. And I think those guys toe the line pretty well. But they're the only thing that's making money for WRIF and probably for their other stations too. So I do think they would support them because they would probably just be terrified about the idea of trying to replace them with a new young show because nobody wants to take a chance on anyone now.
The thing with Dave and Chuck that I find fascinating, I think they've cleaned it up a lot with the syndication. But man, like, 7, 8, 9 years ago, they were like saying cock on the radio. It was like the things they said. And John Senning, who works with Drew at 102.5 The Bone, Drew Garabo, John even said when he would go up there and visit that he couldn't believe what Dave and Chuck were saying. This was like 8 years ago.
Well, we were so pissed when we were going through what we were going through with WRIF and with the FCC. And when they replaced us with Dave and Chuck in 2013, you know, naturally, I wanted to hear what they were doing because we heard they were pretty rowdy. And I was like, oh, they're not going to get away with that on Riff. And then when we heard they were saying stuff like, I mean, they would say boobs or no, they would say tits. I think that was the thing. And we were like, what? They let them say tits? You know, they were making us erase drops that had maybe had the word ass on them or something, you know, just something really minor, stuff that we'd always gotten away with. They were really kind of clamping down on us. And they'd come in and they could say tits. What the fuck?
Now, was it crazy to like be such a big show in such a big area and to get recognized all the time? Like I was like reading, I love reading YouTube comments a lot of times, and all these YouTube comments when I was watching your videos were like, nothing was better than going to work and saying, did you hear Drew and Mike this morning? I've seen a lot of that online.
Yeah, that's very true. There was a time when we originally got over in Detroit. Detroit people are very loyal, and they still are. I mean, with the podcast, I'm amazed by the loyalty. Fantastic. But I swear, Detroit felt like the smallest town. And when we got to the top, it just seemed like if there was a breaking story, we would know someone, or the listener would know someone, and would call and go, oh, here's the guy's phone number. Or somebody would call from a front desk of a hotel and say, Chris Farley's staying here. He's in room 109 or whatever. And then we call back and ask for room 109, and we'd wake up Chris Farley. Yeah, no, it was great. It was really fantastic in a city like Detroit to feel like you somehow had an antenna into anything that was going on. That was really an amazing thing.
What was it like talking to Chris on the phone?
Well, because he was waking up and clearing his throat, and I think he said, I don't remember what he said. He said something like, what the fuck, and hung up the phone. Yeah. We weren't on the phone with him long. It was probably a 10-second call.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I can imagine him in the morning. I can imagine those hangovers were wicked for that guy.
Yeah, he sounded brutal. I mean, it was like getting words through all the phlegm in his throat was very difficult. We woke up Bob Probert at the same hotel when he was playing for the Blackhawks.
Oh, my God.
Probert had been this loved, incredible fighter for the Red Wings. And Probert just said, fuck off or something. And I don't think we even had a delay then.
Yeah, I've heard that guy's very tough, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, Probert was as tough as they come in the NHL. One of the greatest fighters ever. And unfortunately, we lost him about 7 or 8 years ago. There's a great documentary about him. Fantastic documentary. And I don't know what platform it's on, but if you like hockey fighters or hockey, just a fantastic watch.
How are you guys holding up about the Lions?
Wow, I was going to ask you about the Bucks.
I'm more of
everybody
like,
was really, really disappointed and butthurt over the 49ers game, and there's a million people to blame. Reynolds for dropping two passes. Gibbs fumbled. The defensive back had the ball bounce off his face mask into the receiver's arms. The coach decided not to kick field goal twice. When it all washed out, we had not won a playoff game since 1991. It was a fantastic, glorious season, and the future is very bright. So people are really up on the Lions and cannot talk about the Lions enough.
I felt heartbreak for you guys because I'm from Chicago, and I'm like a divorced Bears fan. The last full game I watched was the Cody Parkey double doink, and after that happened, I went, I'm done with the Bears. Like, I am pretty much not a Bears fan. I'm not even a Buccaneers fan. I'm sort of just – I just like watching football. But I – if there was two teams I was rooting for the AFC, it was the Browns, and for the NFC, it was the Lions. Those were the two teams I was rooting for.
Well, there are great days ahead for the Lions, for sure. And I grew up in Chicago, too, so – the 85 Bears were the greatest thing. The Super Bowl shuffle before your time, but that was one of the most incredible seasons I've ever seen any pro sports team have. And that city was so alive with the Chicago Bears that whole season, the whole postseason. And I saw John Brandmeier on your list of radio shows that you love. And John Brandmeier was one of my very favorite shows. I thought he was just fabulous. And he still has a podcast.
Yes.
He doesn't do it very often, but when he does, he and Buzz are fantastic.
Johnny B doing that show during COVID was the most exciting thing ever.
Yeah, no, he is so unique. And that lineup of the Loop, John Brandmeier, Kevin Matthews, Steve and Gary in the afternoon. I would be home for Christmas maybe for a week, and I could sit and listen for 12 hours straight and be completely entertained. That was just really fabulous radio. And totally unique shows, too.
My uncle went to Disco Demolition, but left right before everything happened. And then they would not let him back in.
Yeah, that's amazing how much mileage Dow has gotten off of Disco Demolition. I mean, it still comes up all the time because I can't think of any time in the history of sports when a team has forfeited a game over a radio promotion. And the White Sox were terrible. They were drawing about 9,000 or 10,000 people a night. Bill Veeck owned them. He was a great promoter. And they came up with this Disco Demolition, and Steve Dahl was so hot in Chicago. They drew 52,000. They sold the place out, and of course, it just went ape shit between games. And the White Sox had a forfeit game to the Tigers.
I didn't like that. These Gen Z podcasts are trying to portray him as like racist and sexist. I'm like, no, if you read what happened, from what I've read, he got fired from, I think it was like WDAI, and he was mad because it wasn't that what happened. He got fired from a disco radio station, or it went from rock to that. So he was mad about losing his job. He wasn't, Dahl's not racist and he's not sexist. I can tell you that right now.
No, Dahl is a lot of things, but he's not a bad guy. If you listen to Steve Dahl on a regular basis, even in his craziest, and he is really, really calmed down. He was a good guy. He was great at ragging on people who deserve to be ragged on. I heard some of the best bits I've ever heard on Steve and Gary. There was a guy that was accused of, actually went to prison for raping a woman. His name was Gary somebody. Anyway, the girl recanted after he'd been in prison for like 3 years. And Dahl and Meyer had him on their show like 2 days later after he was let out because the girl recanted and said, no, he didn't rape me. I was going to be home late and I didn't want to get in trouble. So they had him on, and he was such a dork. And all these people were offering him jobs, and he was turning them down because they weren't good enough. And so anyway, the next day they were playing drops with this guy nonstop. And it was just like, I can't imagine a way to handle that story that would have been funnier.
I know. I've listened to a lot of the old shows on, like, let's say, archive.org or YouTube. And what do you think of the conspiracy theory that Stern was influenced by Dahl?
I don't think that's a conspiracy theory at all, because Stern really was inexperienced when Dahl was already a full-time morning guy in Detroit and Chicago, and Dahl was doing some really wide-open radio. I think Dahl dropped music before Howard Stern did.
Yes, that's what I've heard. I've gone to a lot of morning show boot camps over the years, and there was one. It was a panel. It was a fascinating panel. It was Dahl, Tom Bernard, Dick Biondi, or I forget, there were other people, but it was a fascinating panel of all these legends. And Tom Bernard said to Dahl, never forget, he goes, Howard Stern can thank you for everything. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, I don't think there was any FM morning show that had reached a point where what they were doing was more important than the music itself before Steve Dahl. I think he was the first guy, and he also was pushing the boundaries and getting in a lot of hot water with the FCC before Howard Stern. It just wasn't on the level of Howard Stern. Stern got in so much trouble and had, what, $1 million in fines. And I think Dahl had sort of gotten past that and figured out how to stay out of trouble at that point, but still had a fantastic show with Gary Meyer until now, whenever that ended. They were on for about 12 years together.
You know
who, and Howard continued to push things, and Dal was kind of pulling back at that point, had kids and had grown up.
You know who I grew up listening to, but I'm very indifferent about, is Man Cow.
Yeah, he was on your list, and I was kind of surprised because I liked all the shows that you had mentioned pretty much. And Man Cow, I never really warmed up to Man Cow. I don't know if I never heard the right bits. I was home once in Chicago over Christmas, and Man Cow was running a worst of because he was off the air. And I thought that was really funny and cool that he was running a worst of Man Cow. But honestly, I never felt I knew Man Cow or what he was like or found that I liked him. Whereas with Brandmeier, Dahl, Kevin, even Stern, over time, if I listened to them, I felt like, I like this guy. I think I would really like to hang out with this guy. But I never felt that way about Man.
He was a Chicago thing. It was very, how do I explain it? Very blue collar humor. It was like the people plowing the snow. It was, I think it was a generation thing. I think he was like the voice of the Gen Xers in their 20s. But I feel like once all the Gen Xers grew up, I feel like he didn't grow up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that might be true. And in fact, I was checking on his podcast and I don't think he's had success podcasting at all, which is like, how do you have this giant show? And transitioning to podcasting is very difficult. I feel very lucky that I've been able to do that. But I don't think Man Cow has. And Opie's the same way. It's like, how could Opie and Anthony talk to millions of people for all those years and know all those people, all the connections, and he's podcasting to like 500 people?
I know, it's bizarre. It's I don't know if it's ego or what it is, but it's just crazy to think if you were to have said 20 years ago, you know, this guy that's in a bunch of markets and making millions, there's going to be teenagers that will have more listeners than him. You know what I'm saying? It's weird.
No, it's very strange, and it's so obvious that Anthony was the driver of that show. Opie was smart enough to link up with Anthony, with Jim Norton later on, and I think Opie was a kind of facilitator who could sort of run the show or keep it moving along, but he just wasn't compelling himself at all.
Well,
by himself, I just find him completely boring and listless, and I'm like, this guy, how was he able to stay in this show and make all this money? It blows my mind.
What I give him credit for is he was very good at changing the subject, which I know drove Anthony and Jim nuts, but as a radio mind, when I'm listening, I can hear at times, because like for me, I love Anthony. He's one of my favorite hosts of all time, and me and him made the news when he said 7 years ago that he would never work with Opie again, and I sent it to All Access, and it made All Access, and it was cool as hell. But to me, when Opie is there to kind of direct Anthony when they were in their prime, I feel like he was able to reel in Anthony, because Anthony now, Anthony's, God bless him, he's making money and he's a legend, but Anthony is out of his mind.
Anthony's pretty wild, but you know what? Anthony is still funny as hell.
I agree.
He can make me laugh. And you know what? He's been podcasting for 10 years, and he's doing well at it. So
I know
he's clearly the winner in that case by a mile.
Oh, by a long shot, bro.
And I have to say this, too. When I listened to Opie and Anthony, and I was a late bloomer with those guys because I was on the air for all that time, and you didn't have the ability to listen to other shows that much. And then all of a sudden, I was working in the afternoon on sports radio in 2013, 2014, 2015. So I could listen to those guys on the way to work. My first reaction after listening for about a week was, what does Opie do? Why does this show need Opie? I just didn't get it. I thought I must not have listened long enough or something.
Yeah, I think the thing with Opie was that he brought everybody in. Like, he was the one that I don't know what to believe, because you watch all the videos of them yelling about each other, and you got Opie. It's like a breakup. You got Opie's side, you got Anthony's side, you got Jim and Sam's side. But for me, as a radio mind, he was the board op who is the director. But I think the problem was that later on, because if you listen to like old Opie and Anthony, like 95 to 02, they're happy together. They sound like the happiest friends ever. But I feel like when they started bringing in really funny people and he was kind of becoming the afterthought, I think that's what hurt his ego, was that he wasn't getting all the attention like he was, let's say, mid 2000s. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, Anthony could riff with these comedians, with the best comedians. Anthony could go up with these guys, you know, and punch for punch, laugh for laugh. And Opie was just left behind trying to steer the show along because there was nothing else he could do. He just wasn't anything close to Anthony or the people they were having on the shows. So I think he became just a facilitator guy, and I think he knew it. Probably bugged the shit out of him, and so it made him very resentful of Anthony. And Anthony, how can he not resent the guy who really is creating nothing in terms of material or laughs, making $2.5 million a year just like he is?
Yeah.
I think a lot of guys could have done Opie's job. I'll put it that way.
Now, I just realized we've been doing this show for an hour, and I haven't even ate dinner yet, and I also got to go to bed in 3 hours, so I want to have a little time to like smoke weed and maybe go on Pornhub before I let you go.
Drew. Well, yeah, I didn't realize an hour had gone by either, but we can do a part two sometime. So
I'd be
honored. Now we have to get it all in.
I think what we could do is I could have you co-host the show, and we do it where this will be like the introductory episode of like us shooting the shit and getting to know each other. And then we could do something where we kind of like just shoot the shit, but it's not an interview. It's like maybe a play a news clip, and I'll figure out where maybe we can do like a video side or something. We'll figure it out. But for everybody that's listening, how can they tune into the Drew and Mike show?
Just a Drew and Mike show, iTunes or any platform that you listen to, Stitcher, Audio Boom, you name it, we're on it. Generally getting out 4 shows a week or so. I just had my hip replaced. So we might not be doing quite as many shows as normal, but we're still getting a lot of content out there. You can go to YouTube, Drew and Mike Show on YouTube, and we got a lot of good videos on there. And because I was off, we could use the views. It's at Drew Mike Podcast.
How is your hip?
Hip is good. Just a couple little complications, but actually, it's been so long since I've been walking dogs and going to Tigers games and stuff that I'm really psyched to get moving again. I'm walking and feeling less pain than I have in years.
Well, Drew, this has been an honor having you on the show. Even though I didn't grow up in Michigan, when I started looking up radio shows about 20 years ago, I became a fan of you guys, and this has been very surreal to have you on my show. Thank you.
Oh, man, it's been great, Ryan. It's fun to talk to somebody who loves radio as much as you. I'm like you. I love listening to shows. I love finding new shows. I love finding podcasts. And I hope you continue getting your podcasts out there, because that's where your future's at, man, building that platform.
That's the plan, bro. And when I have legends like you on the show, that definitely helps, my friend.
Oh, jeez. How many podcasts are you doing a week?
Currently we're only, well, the thing is I work 8 to 4. So, I'm trying to see if me and my co-host can do about our show, do about 2 episodes a week. And then, 25 Cent, who used to work with Bubba the Love Sponge, who's one of my friends. He's this short little black guy here in Tampa Bay. He's my co-host on Sundays, and we're recording from this, Kava Bars. We did our first episode. We got to figure out the kinks of like the video and that and whatnot, but that went very well. So for the answer for you, I'm working on trying to do like 3 a week. Monday, Wednesday.
That's great.
Monday, Wednesday, Sunday.
That's fantastic. And are you building some audience?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely growing. And the most important part is the time spent listening. People listen to almost my whole show. I've had other co-hosts on where people would listen for like 20 minutes, 18 minutes, because I can see it on Spotify and Apple. But the time spent listening, that's like the thing I take pride in, is knowing that the people that do listen are listening to the whole thing. Because the way I try to build my show is a show for somebody who's caught in traffic. And whenever people tell me, oh, I'll listen while driving around, that means the world to me, because I paint it and I direct it like as if you're listening while you're in traffic and you need something to laugh with and at while drinking some coffee, you know?
No, everybody needs that. Everybody needs a show that has the sound of some guys hanging out, having fun, and people really will get addicted to shows like that. And I thought your Instagram clips were really good. The one with Hefner's axe and stuff. You guys are on the right track.
Thank you. This is just the first time that we're really putting it out there, and we got 1,400 views. So imagine what happens if we do it all the time, you know?
No, you definitely got four guys in the room, and it didn't sound overwhelming with people talking over each other. You guys were getting the video clips up, and I think that's huge. When you're using video for your Instagram, YouTube, I think you'll find that really helps.
What really helps with my team is that I hold up my finger when I want to talk and when I want to finish a sentence so that there's no talking over each other, and everyone's kind of getting the rapport of when to let me talk. And because I am influenced by how Opie was able to bring people in, and I want to take the good sides of it because I know that I don't need to talk every second. So if David and Josh are being fucking hilarious, I'll let them talk for 3 minutes. I don't know if you noticed that. Sometimes I'll take a back seat because you got to let your other team members talk. If you have other team members on your show, you got to let them talk.
Well, it's great when people love the host of the show, but it's so much better when people love the other people in the show too. And a lot of times people will relate to the second or the third person even more than the host, because maybe that's more like their personality. But no, those guys were coming up with some good lines. And I thought, you know, there's definitely some kind of happening there. If you just let it happen, it'll definitely grow.
Oh, for sure, man. This has been awesome, bro. This has been 71 minutes of a podcast. It's crazy.
Well, we'll do it again sometime for sure, Ryan. Keep it up.
Awesome. Thank you, Drew.
You bet.
All right, bye.
Happy Hour. Happy Hour.